Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the National Rugby League.
I do believe we had a couple of these to kick our round off, a couple of games that were total and utter demolition. So if anybody doesn't recognize that that music, that's the arguably one of the greatest tag teams that that professional wrestling has produced in Demolition. So
I literally thought you were nearly going to say we are one of these tag team partners' name collectively smash. So anyway, that's what I thought you were going to say.
That was an axe and a smash.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Final Play Podcast. It's round 9 of the NRL. As Plum just said, the first game, getting straight into it, was the Rabbitohs versus the Storm. And the Storm, I mean I watch every Storm game, but this obviously was exciting because it was 15-0 to the Storm.
Speed kills, and Addo Carr has got plenty of it to burn.
Yep. Yes, he does. I mean, just, it was...
We'll have a bit of a deep dive into that because I think, I think we all know what the start of the week's going to be, but... Just his speed over, like, with that first try that he scored in the corner... Just over 10 meters, and he had Cody Walker cooked.
He had him
barbecued, and Walker had less to travel, and just over 10 meters, and he beat him to the boards. Like, holy mackerel! Like, what was that?
I find he would never do it, but I mean we obviously talk about NFL a lot on here. I find he has that first step, or that overall, 10-yard speed,
just
so to speak.
Just over anybody. Speed. Imagine him at the 40. Imagine what he would do in the 40-yard.
Imagine him as a running back. I'm just comparing it to the two that are, Holmes and Hayne. He has a quicker step at the start, and that's first 10 yards. It's explosive. So,
Holmes and Hayne sort of. Hayne was a little bit of a hybrid. Like, he was. He was a running back, but he was definitely a good pass catcher as well. He could play the wide receiver. I don't see if Addo Carr ever fiddled with the thought of going to the NFL, he would absolutely be a wide receiver. And we talked about it in our previous pod, with the NFL draft and that. There's a couple of guys that come out in this draft that aren't big receivers. They're not DK Metcalf. Do you know what I mean? They're not these gigantic receivers. They're slight. They're only 85 kilos, maybe 90 kilos, ring and wet. But they've got explosive speed.
Yeah, and they run 40 yards in four.
They run good routes, and they get in behind you, and you simply cannot catch them.
Look, this game, Melbourne, where literally everything was flawless. Their completion rate was flawless. Everything they did was flawless, except for, like I said last week, Cameron Munster can still not kick a goal. It's the run-up. It is the run-up. It's a nonchalant run-up. Did you see that on the 40th minute when they all sort of went and hugged him sort of thing on the 40th minute, like it was like winning a grand final? My God. Which is terrible. Like, that's just, add another 10 points onto that, they're 60-0. So,
exactly. Yeah, it could have been, this scoreline could have been a whole lot worse, but like you said, it was just total and utterly flawless by Melbourne. They ploughed South up the middle with their forward play. They got on the outside so easy. And like I said, speed kills. And when you've got guys like Addo Carr out on the flanks. Once you get on the outside, that's it. And Gagai on a couple of times, he's sort of found wanting. He's been sort of in this game, he'd sort of been shifted back out to the wing. They had a little bit of a reshuffle again. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I don't like Gagai out on the wing. He doesn't get involved much. They can't utilize his, I think, very much underrated defensive skills out on the wing.
He was, for what, you know, on that game, and I don't get me wrong, the score was terrible, but he is the defensive bully, big time. So he did in that game again. But you're right, if he was in centers, it'd be a whole different story.
He's just wasted out there. That's all, and that's all it comes down to. I've always said when he played at Newcastle, and he was by far their best player. This is, you know, obviously a few years ago now. He was in the centers. He was involved in everything, and he wasn't wasted. So
no,
it just I just feel he's just wasted out on the wing. It's different when he plays representative football because he plays on the wing and he plays out there unbelievable. He's got a terrific strike rate playing for Queensland, but he's just a natural centre. I think his defensive skills are underrated.
In this game, I mean, we'll talk about this guy later, but Adam Reynolds, you could just tell that they miss him in this game.
Oh, man.
We'll talk about him later.
Well, they missed him, and they missed Latrell as well. Like, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they've got
50 mil. Damien Cork.
No, I understand. Cork has regressed. Look, they're short-handed too. Like, they don't have Cameron Murray. They don't have Campbell Graham. So they're missing
okay,
some
that's
heavy
fair.
Hitters.
That's fair. They're missing three decent. Well, they took a couple of superstars. Yeah, and Cameron Murray's a great player as well.
Yeah,
I think
Cody Walker playing out of position. Like, there's a lot of things that you can sort of poke holes in the South's lineup, but
50-0?
To be obliterated 50-0, that's just not up to standard.
Yeah, I honestly think Damien Cook's regressed. I don't think he's gotten any better at all.
He's very inconsistent this year.
Yeah, I mean,
when they brought in the six agains last year, he didn't. Everybody thought that he was going to be the most dangerous dummy. Even we said it, that he was going to be the most dangerous dummy half in the competition, and he just didn't turn into that, and he hasn't done it this year either.
It's possible he'll be the incumbent New South Wales number nine, but if he ends up being, he's going to have some good very good first game to stay there, because
if he's not the number nine for New South Wales, who is? Because you can't put Cam McGuinness would have been the obvious choice for me, but he's gone for the season.
What about your boy? No, he's not consistent enough. Your boy up in North Queensland? No, he's not consistent enough. He's
Tracy Robinson.
Yeah.
I mean,
Morisau, if he finds some form,
he's been back for a couple of weeks now, so you would think that he would probably be the next cab off the rank with McGuinness gone. So that would probably be the obvious choice. I can only assume, and that then plays into. Again, club combination for New South Wales.
Yeah, that's right. Look, it's possible he will be. I mean, it's not possible. He will probably most likely start the number nine. I mean, I think so, because like you just said, we just tried to go through it then quickly, and we couldn't really think of anybody. I mean, Coruscant's the only one.
That's me. Coruscant's only been back for 2 weeks, so you know.
I'll throw another name out there because I reckon he's at least deserves to be thought about, and he's probably not going to get it. But Jaden Brayley for the Newcastle Knights.
Jaden Brayley, absolutely. I was just about to say, if you didn't say Jaden Brayley, I was going to say, what about Jaden Brayley? But yeah. he's been great for Newcastle.
I'll tell you, in 8 games, just to put it out there, because I just literally found it, in 8 games. He has, and this is against Cook and Coruscant. You can't, he's only had 2 games, but I could say against Cook, he has more average minutes. He has more average tackles. He has the highest tackle percentage. He has the highest, he's just under Damien Cook for average run meters. He has the highest try assists. He has the highest line break assists. He has the highest line breaks. It's only the tackle bus he's lacking in. So that's pretty good.
And that's on a team in Newcastle who have been, you know, the kings of inconsistency this year.
Yeah. So, and look, and like, I mean, most likely Cook will get it, but I mean, he's there. He's young too. So, I like, I mean, I've, I mean, I like, yeah, that was a great pickup by Newcastle. Both the Brayley brothers are great players.
That's right, yeah. Blake's not too shabby either. Don't worry about that.
We'll have to work out what we'll have to do at New South Wales, Queensland, who we think is going to get picked soon. Because
Don't worry, I've got some names jotted down. Don't worry, I'm already prepared.
You can help me on my side because I'm still trying to work out who's going to be fullback. I think it's going to be glaringly obvious, but goddamn, there's 5,000 different choices.
It's a three horse race, and there's some pretty good horses.
We'll move on to the next one, but I'm assuming you mean Tedesco, Trbojevic, and I'd still throw Pappenhausen in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My God. And that's not. There's other ones.
That's
too,
some tough from, choices to make right there.
There's other ones too, but anyway.
Gutherson, they're everywhere.
Next game was another demolition. Panthers smashing the Sharks 48-0. God, I love seeing Penrith like Bluebird Stadium full. It wasn't full, but it's just that decent crowd atmosphere. It's a beautiful 20-grand stadium.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Bankwest Stadium out there. Just it. I don't know.
No,
Bankwest is
Para. Bluebet.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh
yeah, sorry, my bad. Yeah, called Bluebet Stadium now. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, haven't they had some sponsors over the last couple of years? They just keep rolling through them at the moment. It's one of those sort of, I guess, rugby league boutique stadiums, as they want to call them in Sydney. But with the way that Penrith are playing at the moment. They're just annihilating people. Cronulla obviously, well off the pace, in this game. I just thought that they didn't have a lot of defensive urgency. I think that they ran out onto the ground on Friday afternoon/Friday evening and knew they were going to get beat.
That's exactly right.
And that is not good at all.
It felt like a nonchalant sort of run, I guess. I thought the same thing as well. I definitely thought the same thing.
That's just what it felt like to me. There was no line speed, no defensive urgency. Just getting scorched on the outside. They were just totally and utterly off. Just totally off the boil. In the first 50 minutes, Cronulla had 15 tackles in Penrith's half. So they're constantly coming out of their own end. They're making insane mistakes. Just mistake after mistake after mistake.
Yeah.
It was just it was just crazy. Yeah. They had 37% of possession.
Yeah. 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 It's ridiculous, eh? Hey? Yeah.
They just couldn't get the ball.
Yeah. 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 And with that 63%, they get 81% completion rate. It's pretty good. Brian Toto did his, average meters of 300 meters, but and 26 carries. So that's just an average for him now.
He's just turned into a major workhorse at the moment.
We mentioned him before, but I thought, he played the full 80. Api Korosau's first game back was pretty good. I think he didn't have many runs, which is fine, but he did top the tackle count. So first game back, pretty decent.
Yeah, no, not too bad. You can't sort of fault anything there. I thought there was a few players at in the Cronulla side that were sort of found wanting a little bit. I do believe that Chad Townsend got hooked in the 50th minute. I'm pretty sure it was the 50th minute.
Yeah.
Clearly not. And I thought Will Kennedy, who's been really good for them this year, was found wanting a lot. Yeah. Like, he was exposed at fullback a lot up in the line of defense, like Jermaine Asako was last week for that first sort of 15 to 18 minutes against the Gold Coast. Just being that extra defender up in the line, and Penrith are a smart team, and they found those holes, and they found that there's no fullback at home, and they played on it and played it perfect.
Before we get on the next game, I'll put this question to you because it was put to me after this game, actually. Out of the two, demolition teams in Melbourne and Penrith, who...
Axe and Smash?
Yeah, Axe and Smash. Who...
Crush?
That's awesome. who... It's the best way to put this. Who is the best right now, regular season team. Not postseason, because it's easier, then we'll put Melbourne in there. I'm saying regular season team, where it makes it a little bit more.
If you say over the last 2 years, then it's Penrith. Without question. But that's me. What sort of span are you going on?
Well, they're sort of saying, so what has put to me in the last 5 years? Has there been any other team that's been more dominant than Penrith in regular season?
I mean, in the last 5 years, probably not. You know, what have they won? 25 or whatever it is, regular season games on the trot. They've won 9 on the trot this year. The only loss was the grand final. So it's, you know, even stretching into their finals run last year.
I just put it to him.
Total recency bias and say, yes, it's Penrith, but they've come into this super hot stretch of form at the moment, and they're just insatiable at the moment. So, but if you want to go consistency, then it's still Melbourne. If you want to take it over a 5 year stretch, it's still Melbourne, and closely followed by the Roosters.
And I also said to him, I don't even think
Penrith gets a look in.
And it's counting for the fact of the amount of the three biggest superstars that have left in the last 5 years or so. Definitely 5 years. And how they were able to replace them pretty well, I wouldn't say easily, but well, it comes down to one man. But I said that, that's how my argument back. But Penrith, you're right. I mean, regular season, they keep doing this. They need to get over that hump in the grand final.
Oh, exactly. This last year, they're whatever it was, they're 19 in a row that they won in the regular season and stuff like that meant nothing. It meant nothing.
Yeah. 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 I agree.
It's, you know, you look back like it's. I look back to what is it? Was it 2002 or 2003 when the Bulldogs won? What did they win? They won 18 on the trot or 17 on the trot, and
yeah,
it counted for nothing because they got busted for the salary cap and they had all their points taken off them. So they didn't have the opportunity to make a run into the finals. They could have won the grand final that year and end up being the Roosters, but do you know what I mean? Like it all counted for nothing.
Next game was the Friday game with the Eels. Comprehensively beat the Roosters 31-18. I mean, in hindsight,
the scoreline says that, but man, those Roosters, they're like flies when you're out in Western Queensland. They just will not give up. They will not go away.
Well, I will say the first thing I was going to say, put in perspective that they, you know, out of all the teams, they are the most decimated team in the NRL at the moment.
Oh, easily. That's right. They've got injuries up the wazoo. It's unbelievable. Their injury toll at the moment, it's key injuries as well. Like injuries in key positions. They're lucky they've still got Tedesco.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, they're lucky because I mean, during this game, unfortunately, and we'll talk about it a little bit, is just the Drew Hutchinson. Effectively lost because.
He was in a lot of trouble and a lot of pain in that in goal after he got basically a double knee drop. From Dylan Brown.
And he was very reserved, Trent Robertson, in post game, but how that did not get picked up is beyond me. Considering when I looked at, I can't remember which game, and I think it was a game later, but how many? I think it was your game, the Cowboys and Broncos. How many players were put on report in that game? It was that game, actually. Yeah, there was a count of 12, which is ridiculous because Vossi was going off.
There's always going to be a fiery encounter up here.
Well, Vossi was going off. He said, well, you're going to have to hire a charter plane just for Cowboys and Broncos to go from Queensland into the judiciary.
They'll do that.
Drew, exactly right. Yeah, he got poleaxed with a double knee. And got smashed in the head.
I guess what you're talking about, I talk about it now, I guess. I didn't really see a lot of malice,
and
a lot of intention. It was a slide that's gone horribly wrong. Yeah, he's taken him too long to actually hit the ground to slide in on his knees to try and come in and I guess sort of effectively make a tackle, but it's taken him too long to get down, and he's landed right on top of him. And when it happened, when I was watching the game, you could tell that he was in big trouble, Hutchison, big trouble.
And he did cop a head knock too. Like he copped a shoulder to the head in that sort of smash fest as well. That you could definitely see that as well.
Tedesco got smashed as well by Nia Corre, yeah. But at least he was put on report for that.
Yeah, exactly.
But this incident has essentially gone by unpunished. Like I haven't seen anything out about the charges for this week and whether or not Dylan Brown is on the charge sheet.
No, I haven't seen anything yet. I mean, look, for the Eels anyway, when they had the ball and they had a lot of ball, 64%, they completed very well as well. So they took their chances and they got there. They were pretty impeccable in this game.
Look, I thought they started off. I thought they started off a little ordinary. I think Parramatta like that. They were a little. I don't know. They just weren't sort of clicking. With the amount of ball that they had, they weren't punishing the Roosters, and the Roosters had really good goal line defense. Like that, they would not give up the Roosters, and for the amount of possession that they had, and it just they were just getting gifts from the heavens, like so many drop balls by the Roosters inside their own half, trying to work the ball out, and Parramatta just kept throwing. Not so much everything they had at them, but it's not as if they were flat in attack. It was just terrific, defensive, goal line defensive presence by the Roosters that were holding Parramatta out, and yeah. I think they might have been getting a little frustrated.
No, I think they definitely were getting frustrated. But then, look, they came back in that 16 minute with Blake Ferguson, who does know how. He always surprises me. He does know how to find that try line when he needs to. He just does. Like he's just an interesting sort of dynamic of a player because he doesn't look like he can find a try line, but he does find the try line.
No, look, it's, I mean, and he's done it for a long time now and done it for a lot of teams. So I guess he's sort of that professional try scorer, professional winger, much like Brett Morris and the likes of that. Yeah. You could even put in Ikavalu. For the limited amount of first grade games that he's had.
Good point.
He's got a crazy stretch. It's like Charlie Staines. Yeah. In the last game, he scored 7 tries against Cronulla in 2 games.
Yeah. Good point.
But we circle back to this. Yeah, he's the consummate professional out there. He can be a little bit sort of rocks and diamonds every now and then, but he's usually more good than bad.
Look, that was a game the Eels had to win because to prove that sort of, premiership credentials, so to speak. With the Roosters, going forward, you're not too worried about them at the moment. They have slipped to fifth.
In the top four with the injury toll that they've got, it's hard to see them not be in a little bit of a free fall at the moment. Look, Sam Walker was in the wars in this game as well. He was hobbled by an ankle. He was hobbled by a shoulder. And he stuck it out and continued on the game. I'm pretty sure he's been cleared of any sort of major damage to shoulder and ankle. So he'll line up again next week. But now, again, they're going to have to find another halves partner because Hutchison looks like he's going to be gone for. He's got a punctured lung and a couple of cracked ribs. He's going to be gone for a little while. So now they've got to bring in Lachlan Lamb and the likes of that. This just paves the way for Suiali to come in and play first grade.
Well, he's going to have to. I mean, they have the team list haven't been announced yet. Usually they get announced probably the next half an hour or so. So if we see it, we'll let you know. But generally they get announced by then. So, because they were coming up to obviously Magic Round, so that's probably why they're holding off. So,
Magic Round.
Next game is the Knights beating the Raiders 24-16. The Raiders just in a massive, massive free fall. Huge.
Oh man, they are in such a slump at the moment. They have been outscored in their last 5 second halves, 91-8.
Wow. Wow, the stats. Yeah, wow, that's interesting. Jesus.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. Old stats man. I can't work it out. Because they effectively, well, I mean, look, they had a great first half. They had a really, really good first half.
They were... and again, they it just, it's unbelievable what the how competent they look in the first half and how just disgraceful they look in the second half. Like I don't know what it is. You know, just they're getting outscored 10 times the amount in the second half over their last five games over this losing streak. It's crazy how this is happening to them.
I can't work it out. I don't know. I mean, there's a little thing coming out of Bateman saying he doesn't know how internal stuff gets out all the time, and even though
that's right, there's a mole in the ranks there that's leaking obviously details that they want to keep in house that's being leaked to the media. So, you wouldn't think it would take too long to sort of rat out that person, but in regards to their play on the field, they're so out of sync with each other. They had 64% of possession in the first half, and I get it's only up 16-0, but to have that sort of overwhelming amount of possession, Newcastle were just getting murdered penalty wise and restart wise. They were so ill disciplined in the first half. They had five set restarts against them and three penalties against them. So they were just up against the fence that whole first half. But the second half kicked off perfectly for them. In their first set of six, Phoenix Crossland goes over the line. Yeah. Basically, the third or fourth option that they're going to have as their, do you know what I mean, as their halfback going forward. So it's just, how can our boy Tex Hoy not get in that side? Come on.
Well, I was about to say, if Tex Hoy's not going to be here, that's not a bad name as a backup, Phoenix Crossland, for some reason.
And look, he looked a little bit sort of overwhelmed in the first half as well, but he controlled the game beautifully in that second half.
Well, apparently he's seen as the long-term, when I read up about him, the long-term halfback for the Knights. So, you know, obviously when Mitchell Pearce moves on. So he's a Kiwi too. That's interesting. You wouldn't pick it.
No.
No, he's blonde as they come. But look, Newcastle did well. I thought Jaden Brayley had a really good game in that game, personally. You know, speaking of Brayley.
Jaden Brayley has been absolutely a shining light for that side over the first nine rounds. Like I said, you know, been wildly inconsistent. Ponga, look, he had a very mixed... very mixed afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of really poor drops. He dropped a sitter of a bomb, and then while they're on the attack, he's holding the ball out, you know, cupping the ball out, and trying to sort of hook the player at marker, and then the ball just drops out when they're this in perfect attacking position, and you see him just stand there and he just claps himself, and it's just like, well, you know you've done wrong.
Yeah,
like you've
yeah.
just. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes he has these little brain explosions there. Yeah. It's whether or not he's just not concentrating on the game enough, because he's such a dynamic star, and I don't think it's really, unless he just totally goes off the boil, I don't think there's going to be anybody else who's going to unseat him as the Queensland fullback. But I guess that sort of remains to be seen. Mm. But I just think he sort of floats in and out of games a little bit too much, but you want to have that balance with him. You know, we sort of criticized him a little bit last week. Not so much him, but I think Adam O'Brien and his game plan to try and insert him a little bit too much at first receiver. Whether or not that's just to keep him engaged in the game, because just in this game, he just didn't look like he was there 100% of the time.
Next game was the Titans beating the first Saturday game. The Titans second Saturday game. My apologies. 36-28. The Titans beating the Tigers. Sorry. Look, first things I wanted to say first is, and I know this is right at the end of the game, but Fifita's send off, or sin bin, I should say. What'd you think?
Yeah. Ordinary to say the least. He may have a case to answer.
I get the report. I just don't know if I get the
look
sin bin.
At it. Didn't look great, but
did it deserve a sin bin? But I get the report. I definitely get the report.
No, well, that's, I mean, probably not. But the way that they're sort of going at that at the moment, in anything's a send off at this point in time. Some of the stuff that people have been said they're being sent for to the bin for 10 is just lunacy. Just recently, it's just some of the it's just soft stuff. But
yeah, fair.
Yeah, look, he I'm not sure if he's got a clean record at the judiciary. He doesn't seem like the dirtiest of players. So, that's just a bit of a lazy arm sort of hanging out there. I listened to it on the radio while I was sitting in the stands at Queensland Country Bank Stadium awaiting the local derby up here. Yeah. Just listening to this game on the radio, it was just a lazy arm. He sort of hung out there. Look more spectacular than no malice intent. It's the same sort of thing as Jack Etherington on Val Holmes. Just got stepped there. Just got just a little bit of footwork, hung an arm out, and it it looked more spectacular than what I guess a lot of people are sort of banging it up to be.
They played. I mean, they had a red hot start. Obviously, the Titans.
It was Groundhog Day. It was Groundhog Day again.
But that's what they are.
Red hot start. Yeah, 3 tries in the first 15 minutes, and it's like. Pretty sure I seen this game last week, and it didn't turn out so well for the Gold Coast. So, they'll want to sort of keep their wits about them in this game. But they were hot to trot.
Yeah.
To kick this game off, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, they were really hot to trot. I'm just with the Tigers. I don't know, like they. I think to
they
me
showed
at the
fight
end
in the la- they showed fight in the last 15 minutes of the game when the game was gone.
I actually think Adam Dewey is pretty comfortable at the six now that I see it more and more. I think he's fine there.
That's right. You look at how well he adapted to the fullback role. So yeah. I guess it's kind of natural that he sort of adapted just as easily to the number six.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, yeah, he did. And he did. He did very well. I just think he just doesn't have a great seven. I'm keep harping on him, but he just doesn't do enough for me. And this is Luke Brooks. He just doesn't do enough.
He doesn't do enough for the West Tigers.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, he doesn't do enough for the West Tigers at all. So
look, and just sort of, I think, the Gold Coast sort of, not so much learnt a little bit from the lessons of last week, but their scramble D was a hell of a lot better than what it was. They had a lot more sort of urgency than what they did last week against Brisbane when Brisbane were just opening them up left, right, and centre. They showed a little bit more sort of grit defensively. Granted, Brisbane are probably a little bit better attacking side than what the Tigers are, but you can only play the team in front of you. And like I said, a little mini surge towards the end. By the Tigers to sort of make the score a lot closer, I guess, than what it probably deserved to be, because the Gold Coast were clearly the better team in this, and for them to only win by 8 they sort of took the foot off the gas a little bit. Like they're up 36-12, so you can forgive them for sort of letting up a little bit, but you can't do that when you've got a good team on the ropes.
Next game was a game, as you just said, that you were at, and the Cowboys beating, like literally beating the Broncos 19-18 in a crowd attendance of 22,222. So all the twos, is really weird.
Richie Benno would have been, orgasmic over saying that crowd number. I thought it was a fake crowd number when they put it up on the big screen. It's like, oh, come on. It's not 22,222. Give me a break.
How's the atmosphere? I still haven't been to that stadium, obviously.
Unbelievable. I bet that's the third game I've been to this year. And
with a full crowd.
The crowds that were there, it's still a good stadium noise wise. Like, it holds in the noise fairly well, even with 12,000 or 13,000 people in there, like there had been for the first two games that I went to. But this was something else. Like just
yeah,
it's the biggest crowd they've had there since the season opener last year. you know, when they opened the stadium against the Broncos. So
it was a great game to watch. It always is unbelievable. It always with these two, regardless of where they are.
Like you text me about it, like, you know, just was this just a typical, you know, could you see this coming? Like, it was going to come down to being a close game and possibly going to Golden Point. Like, just unreal.
That first try by Kyle Fowler, I have never, ever seen someone put a ball like that down in my life, ever.
I think in a former life he was a contortionist.
Andrew Voss was collectively going wild for that first try. You wouldn't have heard it because, I mean, obviously you were at the game, but he just, they were both, him and I think it was Braith there, I'm trying to think. I think that was the other voice. They were just going like, they cannot work how the hell he got the ball. They both said that's the best put down they've ever seen, ever. In their entire football life.
You could see as he was being pushed towards the touchline and the corner post that he was trying to put it down over his back.
Yeah.
You could see the ball up a little bit and he's trying to put it down over his back. And then he sort of realized as he sort of tilted his head a little bit when you watch the sort of replay of the try that he looks down and he sort of looks out of the corner of his eye and he's like, oh, there's the try line just there, and basically puts it down over the back of his head. There's so many terrific acrobatic tries these days where they dive for the corner. You see the Jason Saab one against the Warriors where he basically does like a Superman dive and then a Rambo roll afterwards. But this was one of the most just crazy put downs that you'll see on a rugby league field.
And honestly, to me, watching this game, I guess from a TV standpoint, the Broncos lost that game themselves. They had every chance to win that game right up until that penalty by like Matt Lodge right on that right just before half time with Valentine Holmes.
And to say that they were sort of cracking down on repeat offenses,
he should
and everything
have been 10 minutes
he should have been binned. Like, that's I don't think that's being a one-eyed supporter or not.
They absolutely knew
what they were doing
to
try and stop them from scoring. You see Tamalolo tried to do the quick tap. And, you know, he almost bulldozed his way over. He had about six people hanging off him. And you could just see there was just hands everywhere trying to maul and mob him to try and slow him up from playing the ball, to try and give away a deliberate penalty. And it was 100% obvious. And I think that could have been one of those instances where, I think it would have been deserved for him to go for 10 in the bin. Obviously, it didn't happen. They had to take the 2 points as a penalty
It was effective.
It was 12-8 at halftime. Oh, that's right. It worked. And that's the risk. That's the risk that they ran, and it worked for them.
And even Tamalolo's trial right at the end there at 74th minute. That's what I mean. They had the game won, Broncos. It was just silly errors and mistakes. That sort of cost them.
It was just the way that this game sort of went. Like the Broncos had a buttload of possession inside the Cowboys' half. The Cowboys, especially in the first half, were constantly working the ball off their own line. I thought that Clifford's game was on and off. I think his kicking game can be a lot smarter than what it is at the moment. He seems to go for more height than length. If that makes any sense, he likes to put the bomb up and make the player engage the ball and try and catch the ball rather than trying to play for field position and kick to corners of the field and find the grass and make your kick chase do the work, which I think is a lot more effective than trying to hope that the fullback is going to drop the ball, because that's, you know, that's a very hit and miss sort of tactic. And that's sort of one thing that was, I think, a little bit more obvious at the ground rather than watching it on TV. Obviously that he got the desired result in one part of it where Asako went straight through him and he dropped the ball and the Cowboys sort of started to get a little bit of ascendancy. Once that started to happen, a real funny thing, just sort of, I was watching the big screen when that drop happened, and it's about a second or so behind the actual action on the field. So as I'm watching the big screen, I heard the crowd erupt, and I'm just like, what the hell's going on? What's just happened? And then you see it on the big screen that Asako dropped the ball. So it was a bit of a a delayed reaction in the dropping of in sort of seeing that up on the big screen there. But look, the Cowboys sort of only had themselves to blame in the first half too. Like they were completing at 92% up until the last 10 minutes,
yeah,
and it dropped to 70%. I think they completed like one of their last four sets in the last 10 minutes. The Broncos were, I think they were borderline the better side.
And that's how it came across on the screen, on the TV screen, that they were probably
in the big moments, they wilted a little bit.
Yeah, they did. I think it was the 13th minute with Tamalolo going off, having a sort of a quick break, and he had to sort of go back on. That was a weird sort of, I mean,
that was a very odd substitution, but he did come back. I think come back on in like the 26th or 27th.
Yeah, he ended up playing 71 minutes in the game. He did what I'm hoping Todd Payton taught him to do, and he just busted the middle. He did 20 runs for 231 meters.
He's back to his destructive best. Like it took him the game last week where he was probably a little underwhelming and I guess sort of just out of game shape.
Yeah.
Nothing gets you back into shape than playing football, and he was a little bit underwhelming last week against the Warriors, but yeah, he was absolutely back to his destructive best, and just I guess another one of those things that you sort of pick out while you're at the game. You could tell that he was picking out certain players to run at in the line of defense as well, because we were sort of sitting behind the goalposts up the northern end, and you could just see just the way that he would sort of jink his way once he would catch the ball. He wasn't just running straight up the middle. He would make a concerted effort to try and target somebody in the line of defense. And I think that's obviously the way he sort of got to go about his work, and it seemed to work really well.
Is having that spot where you sit before you move on, that's not too bad behind the post? I mean, not that behind the post isn't always the greatest, but still.
I generally don't like sitting behind the post at footy, but this actually wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I'm surprised you were there,
Yeah, I was sort of sitting midway up in the grandstand. So it was actually a pretty good sort of vantage point, but it was just so happened that most of the action ended up happening up the other end of the field, which is a little disappointing.
Well, I'm assuming tickets would have went fast is possibly why you ended up at the back of the post, I'm assuming.
No, well, not really. It was just, we just wanted to get whatever tickets that we could. Yeah. I got them was pretty much when they went on sale. I didn't really care where we were going to sit, but, it didn't really bother me. And then where I saw where we were going to sit, it didn't matter as long as I was going to be there for the, cause I haven't been to a Cowboys Broncos game, up here in a couple of years. So, to be there, to have, a bumper crowd and to send a lot of, Brisbane Broncos fans home very unhappy was very, very satisfying, especially the next at work when I didn't get a whole lot of sleep.
I will say just when from a TV standpoint before we move on is that I felt the Cowboys, like the actual noise of Cowboys fans was easily bigger than the Broncos. And generally it seems to be pretty even with these two play against each other.
It's usually 50-50.
It was not 50-50.
There was definitely a Broncos presence there. Like, don't get me wrong about it. There might have been a 60-40. And you could tell too when both teams were kicking their place goals, like either their penalty goals or their conversions. That's when you can tell when they were getting like how biased the crowd was, because boy, there was a lot of boos for Jermaine Asako.
he is a good player, but I do like Jermaine Asako.
The set of six that led up to the Holmes field goal was perfect. They had Clifford set up behind the sticks to try and kick it. He juggles the ball. He has to run. He throws it back. Drinkwater looks. They all run at him, and then it basically leaves Val open, and he just slotted it straight down the middle. And it's the place just absolutely erupted. It would have been crazy to sort of listen to it outside the ground, just to sort of hear the noise, because the noise inside was deafening.
Yeah, Yeah, it was. Or you can hear it generally, well, through the TV screen. But I thought it was more 70-30. Broncos fans just didn't seem to be.
Oh, don't worry. We were sitting in a row, like basically our whole row was Broncos supporters. So there were plenty out in force.
Next game was the Seagulls beating the Warriors 38-32. The Manly Seagulls.
What a wild game this was.
Yeah, it was a wild game, but I mean, again, I mean, we've said it since he's come back. It's just another Tom Trevoy boots masterclass. The guy is like five
like,
one
well, breaks. What does he do to this side to just get them up like this? It's unbelievable.
He gets them forward. So I mean, regardless, he had the most run meters, and he got obviously a couple of tries, but he had five line breaks and three line break assists and four try assists. For a fullback, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. You may fantasy as well, points would have been through the roof.
Yeah, well, 114, I think it was. 100 neat, sorry.
Is that all?
Yeah. Well, going off the NRL one, I don't know the rest of them, but.
I find the NRL one is real stingy on scoring.
Yeah, so probably more like 145. But he did basically what Kieran Foran should be doing. I mean, he was dynamic. He was everywhere. He controls that side. And I don't think it's Daly Cherry Evans. I think it is Tom Dvojevic. It is. Oh, don't get me wrong. It is Daly Cherry Evans to an aspect. But Tom can control that side, and it seems to work because they're on a roll.
Well, it seemed that way in that first half. Like the Warriors get off to the super quick start. And then it's a Cherry Evans 40-20 that gets the sort of wrestles momentum back a little bit, back to Manly and basically have back-to-back tries by Trebojevic, in the first what 10 or 11 minutes, yeah. And that sort of it just sort of seesawed a little bit then, and it looked like that the Warriors were sort of they had the better of the final sort of period in the first half and getting a couple of a nice easy try to go in to half time. They had a penalty goal and then they ended up pretty much basically scoring again off the ensuing set of six to go into half time, like 20-12. And then it was just a different team that come out at half time, like Manly. Yeah. They were sensational.
Yeah, they were absolutely sensational. They poured those tries on real quickly too.
I found that they're a real confidence team. So if Cherry Evans has got his tail in the air, you know, they've got Trebojevic there. We're not seeing enough from Kieran Foran, I don't think. And once that combination starts to get, if it gets back to anything, you know, like it was in their previous runs, in their premiership winning runs, then, you know, Manly could be a real dangerous side.
Manly will be one of those. It didn't happen that last few, wasn't last year, but the year before, but again, because Tom wasn't there. Manly will probably hover around that 5, 6, 7, 8 in the bottom, you know, top eight, so to speak. And they'll surprise people. I reckon they're a dark horse. They're surprising people now. Just on that game too, their brother Ben Dvojevic was 18th man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
So he looks like, if you have a look at a picture of him, he looks literally a mix of both of them, Tom and Jake. He looks like his big jaw and lips like Jake, and then just obviously the rest of the features look like Tom. It's ridiculous. He's just a hybrid of it. I swear to God. But anyway, on the other side for me, Warriors weren't. They weren't bad. That I sort of didn't mind, you know, in his first game, so to speak, at number six, Reece Walsh was pretty good. I mean, he's still young, so I had to give him that season. Well, he only played 26 minutes, personally.
Yeah,
but
they had him on the bench, and you could see that he was a little nervous sitting on the bench. Like, yeah. Chanel Harris-Tavita, obviously the incumbent six there. And I think they had a really good combination with Nick Arima. So, look, it's a good problem to have. Reece Walsh sort of come on and basically scored, in the 75th minute, 74th minute, and sort of was really pushing, you know, really pushing the Warriors forward, and only through, I guess, two crazy try-saving tackles by Jason Saab. In that last 5 minutes. There's a reason why this game didn't go into Golden Point and possibly had a Warriors win.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, and that's exactly how it came across as well. So I thought the Warriors, well, they were. They were well in this during the whole game. They were fortunate they weren't let down by Cody Nikorima's conversion rate. He's a good kicker. He's a very good kicker. He's been a decent pickup for me, essentially a Broncos, so to speak, outcast.
He's been a
good pickup for the Warriors. Very decent pickup. Not just the kicking, but he can run the ball pretty well, and he breaks the line when he needs to.
Fast. We said it last week. He was having an absolute field day against the Gold Coast last week.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I mean he's 174 centimeters, so he's not tall, so to speak, but that matters anyway, especially if you've got that line speed. So
no, that's right. He's got that speed, but he's just got that good nous. Around the ruck as well, because he's played dummy half before. So, you know, he knows when he can sort of get out of dummy half and engage the line like he does. And when he sniffs around the ruck like that, he's a very, very capable player.
And the final game was the Dragons beating the Bulldogs 32-12.
A poor first half by both teams. I think both teams look extremely disjointed in attack. Throughout the first half, and I think they were sort of lucky to even, you know, to have 6 points on the board.
Both teams come across Dragons. in that first 30-40 minutes in basically as two bottom eight sides. I mean, easily. It's just how it came across.
Yeah, look, whether or not the Bulldogs sort of drag the opposition down to their standard, but
fair. It's not a bad way of looking at it.
I think that happened. Once we started to get towards the end of the first half, there was seven errors in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It was four to the Bulldogs, three to the Dragons. They just nobody wanted to hang on to the ball. The best thing for that game was halftime, and especially for the Dragons.
Because it was pretty even thing. That whole. Considering considering the scoreline 32-12, the stats are pretty even. The whole game, really, at the end of the day, was just obviously Dragons took the opportunities that they needed to actually win the game, because they were each stat was pretty, pretty bang on. I mean, possession, completion rate, Bulldogs were slightly up, which is, weird when you look at it, but generally everything was sort of pretty even. So it's just the Dragons took their chances.
That's right, and they came out after halftime a completely different side as well. They look crisp in attack, and they took their, as I said, they took their opportunities, and they had plenty of opportunities to score, but just could not crack the Dragons' goal line defense.
That Paul Vaughan, that's how he should play. I mean, he's hitting 30 now, but that's the games he should sort of play. Just he doesn't need to deviate. Just run straight. Just run straight, because he's, 193 centimeters. So he's a
big. He's a gigantic human.
Yeah, he's a gigantic human. So, good win by Dragons. Bulldogs. Look, I mean. We really aren't going to expect much for the rest of the year from them,
I think a real shining light for them is Luke Thompson, and we'll probably say that basically all year. Luke Thompson gets through a mountain of work. It's just, man, they love, boy, don't the Bulldogs love dragging a pom over and just sort of grinding them into the ground, because when James Graham first come over here and they made that grand final. Against, I can't remember who that was. It was against the Rab. Was it the Rabbitohs that they made the grand final against? In 2014, and then all of a sudden, James Graham is just my admiration.
Actually, the Storm, because didn't James Graham have an incident with Billy Slater?
He tried to give him a bit of a chomp on the. I don't think that was in the grand final. I think that was in a preliminary final.
Ah, okay. I thought that was a grand final, because there was a massive crowd, and they were really near they're literally near the crowd fighting. So
yeah, that's right. No, pretty sure that was a preliminary final.
There you go. Okay. So moving on, we've got our, I mean, I think we touched on it at the start, but I mean, my start of the week was pretty easy. It's Josh Adokar. I don't think we need to say any more to that.
Nah, look, Adokar was, they were talking about it there on the broadcast saying that, you know, that you know, five tries have been scored in a game by 18 different players throughout the history of the game. So, and even saying that, like, that's, you know, in the game's been played since 1908 in this country. So, and the funny thing about that was that last year there was that we had two of them. You know, we had Ikavalu score five tries. Pretty sure that was against the Cowboys. And then Johnston basically get gifted five tries last year to steal the try scoring record off. Yeah, you know, the top try scorer off Kyle Feld last year. So
he got six in that game, but at Adokar. So yeah, I know.
But that's right. Yeah, it's six, tries. and that's what they were talking about, and they actually started coming up with the stat. I think it was Greg Alexander come up, and he said, he goes, "Oh, when was the last time somebody scored six in a game?" And they had their statistician sort of dig it up. It was 71 years ago. Jack Troy for the Newtown Jets against the Sydney Roosters in 1950. I don't even think it was 10 minutes later that Adokar gets the sixth try. And then they started going on about that. So, you know, first time in 71 years that a first grade player has scored six tries in a first grade game. Unbelievable.
Who's going to the Bulldogs next year? And
who's
Matt Burton.
Going to the Bulldogs next year?
And Matt Burton. They'll be pretty well set up next year. They'll, you know, you have those two there. Matt Burton. I mean, I love Matt Burton. That's a great sort of pickup that they'll have. And Adokar. I'm assuming they'll start looking back in the engine room a bit too. So, your dud of the week. Sort of mentioned mine, to be completely honest. But you go ahead.
The thing that sort of irked me over the last 18 months, and you know where I'm going with this, is nobody wants to get out and go to, everybody's afraid of the outside now. So in Sydney, they had those two cases of coronavirus. Unbelievable. They bring in level three restrictions and you know, that they need masks worn on public transport and in indoor, you know, indoor places and things like that. I understand that. But one thing that I didn't hear throughout all these level three restrictions was a travel restriction. So at Bankwest Stadium, Parramatta and the Roosters, the commentators aren't there. They send one sideline person there. They're not there. So you try and give the fans the illusion that you're there, right? So you might say things like, oh, you know, what a terrific stadium, and oh, you know, I love being here, and things like that. Michael Ennis just opens up the can of worms and says, while on the broadcast, oh, you know, it's looking great out there at Bankwest Stadium.
Yeah,
out there at Bank, they're not even there.
At least, but that's fine.
They've got to go and broadcast the game from somewhere, right? So they're probably broadcasting it from Fox Studios. So they've got to travel to go to Fox Studios to broadcast the game. Just go to the ground.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Go and do your job.
Yeah.
There's no travel streaks. It pisses me off
so much. No, but they did have those issues.
Everybody's afraid of the outside as if coronavirus, when you walk out your front door, is going to melt your face off like acid rain. People can't be afraid of being outside.
But there was issues during that weekend where Sydney was in that mini sort of like lockdown during that. It wasn't a lockdown, but it was.
I've looked at it. There was nothing in those level three restrictions that said travel restrictions.
I didn't say travel restrictions. I'm saying about the mask.
Like, they've got to go and broadcast the game from somewhere. Like, at least the NBA is sort of opening it up and going, hey, broadcasting from our, you know, from our basement, you know, here in New York, and you know, Mark Jackson's in LA and blah, blah, blah. And it's really hard for them to work off each other. But you can tell that the two main commentators, Dan Ganane and Michael Ennis, were in a studio somewhere. They weren't at somebody's house. They were in a studio somewhere. At Fox Studios, they would have had to have traveled to Fox Studios. That's so fair. Just travel to the game. That's the thing that got me riled up. It's not that they're in their house broadcast. They had to travel to go and broadcast this game. So why can't they go out to the stadium?
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. Because we're not talking that far. No, I agree. Yeah, that's fair. Because they would have had to. Yeah, no, that's fine. I get it. Mine was, as you mentioned, I won't have to stay long on this, but collectively the Raiders' second half. They really need to know how to win the second half. That means as simple as that.
Just another second half collapse.
Yep. Yep.
After being so good in the first half.
They were 16-0. They were riding well. It's a huge lack of confidence. I mean, it is. That's it at the end of the day.
Why are they not having the same confidence in the first half as what they do in the second half? Like
there's got to be more to it. Because you have a reigning Dally M player, Jack Wine, who doesn't even look like he's playing like to the way he usually plays. There's something else going on. I feel like there's something else going on. Like he doesn't get talked. He'll be there or thereabouts in New South Wales, but he doesn't get talked about. That there's something going on. In that, I don't know. It's weird. It is.
He's going to be another one of those players that's playing out of position because he's going to be playing in the centres for New South Wales.
Well, he did last year. So yeah, but I mean something that they're not saying is going on there, and it could be as simple as a lot of the England expats. My theory it was, and it's probably not right. So no one read into this, but
you got all these
English expats. Yes, you've got coronavirus. Yes, they're away from family. If you have a collective, say, four or five of them that are homesick, as one of them has come out and said, and they could bring the whole team down, you're a collective
who's
unit.
Who's to say that George Williams has sort of basically come out and said without saying that he's a little bit homesick? And who's to say that that's not being projected onto the other Poms that are in the side?
That's what I mean.
Then they would start to think about it then. So it just gets in your mind.
And then the other Poms, if they're walking around depressed, then it puts the other players off kill. That's what I'm saying.
Sure, they all hang out with each other.
Well, they have to. That's what I mean. I don't think it's as simple as that. But that was my sort of theory. I don't know. Something's going on there. But they have a great side.
You don't want to overcomplicate things either, like, you know, when it comes to things like that. So, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, usually the in most things in life, the simplest explanation is the right one. Do you know what I mean? So it could just be as simple as that. Could just be a concentration factor. Like they're in and they're locked in for that first half, but once they go in. Go into the sheds and then they relax a little bit and they can't switch back on coming out for the second half. And that looks like that's what's happening. They just cannot flip the switch, as they say, to turn back on to go out for the second half.
They have such a good side too, which is disappointing.
Well, that's right. And see, they've got a few injuries as well. You know, no Jared Croker, Charles Bickle-Plockstad. No, that's right. But I think Nickel Klokstad is a major cog that sort of makes their machine turn. But it's they've got a pretty good replacement in Caleb Akins there. Like, you know, they could do a lot worse as a backup.
I think the Croker one's probably underratedly missed as well because he's their leader, and leaders can lead. You know, you need a leader there really on the field if it's sort of. That first half, second half, that helps. So, I don't know. I think they'll bounce back. Moving on, or just quickly, injury news. Pat Carrigan, you know, it seems to be if anyone's a senior leader or a captain in the side, they just kind of get injured in the Broncos because he ended up getting
injured. Well, they touted him at the start of the year, and he's only been there for a little bit, but they touted him as one of their forward leaders and possible captain. Well,
he was a skipper. He was a skipper in that game. So he's gone down with a ruptured ACL, and it looks like he'd be out for the year of whatever.
That's going to be a season done, which is just a cruel, cruel blow. For the Broncos, they're just, you know, he's a super young player, and that's a big loss, I think, for Brisbane in their forward pack.
Yeah, he definitely is. I mean, because they're talking, Walters hasn't made a call yet on who they're looking at to be the leader. But, I mean, they've got a couple there. You've got Anthony Milford was, yeah, he's there or thereabouts.
And, apparently, and they're not quite. There's rumours out there that they haven't shut the door on re-signing him.
Well, if they don't get, it's not bad, because if they don't get, and that's a great segue to our last point. But if they don't get a halfback of 5'8", they're probably going to have no choice. It's going to be a severely less contract than he wants, but they're going to have choice.
It's going to be a lot less than what he's on right now.
Because who they are after, just to finish up, is, and it seems to be a two-horse race on Adam Reynolds, is them and the Sharks. This is extremely late-breaking news, but basically Coach Wayne Bennett has revealed that there's definitely no chance that Adam Reynolds will be in that side come next season.
Obviously the Rabbitohs brass has said this is our deal and we're sticking with it. So he's obviously got suitors, at other clubs, and his manager will be working his magic. So that's what I mean. And if he's got the option to like we sort of said before we come on here, it was what's going to be the lure to get him to the Broncos.
I love how even though he's leaving at the end of the year as well, that Bennett's the one that's come out and said that. They've probably asked him to, so don't get me wrong, but still it's just interesting.
Yeah, but he's a smart old boy. Like he doesn't let information out that he doesn't want to get out, do you know what I mean?
Of course. He's the lure to go to the Broncos is the 4-year deal. So at the start, they end up signing they offered, reportedly offered Reynolds a 4-year deal worth $2.8 million. Cronulla, on the other hand, this is literally in the last hour or two, have offered still a 3-year deal, but it's $2.45 million. So it's collect obviously a lot more per year over the 3 years. He's still tossing it up because he still sort of thinks, which, you know, he's turning 30. He's still a great player.
He's backing himself that he can still play at a high clip in 4 years.
Which he could.
You got to back yourself, haven't you?
So that's their best offer. The Sharks have come out and said that they've tabled their best offer, which is, I mean, $2.45 million for 3 years is a really good offer for a 30-year-old.
800,000K is nothing to sneeze at.
But they are not prepared to go for a fourth season. So, yes, the Broncos did initially do a 3-year deal with 2.4, but Reynolds is chasing that fourth year, so that is going to get them there. They would have
to. That's what you would think would get the Broncos over the line.
So my game question is, do they get it? Because If he ends up going to the Sharks, they're looking mightily pretty, I think, because they also got Cam McGinnis coming in. So
this has obviously changed now that they're going to have a different coach there, but they were looking at McGinnis to be playing 13 and not 9.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's probably going to, because they got that young Brayley there that's playing pretty good
that's
at number 9.
That's right, exactly.
So they got a lot of people coming off contract and a lot of money to free up. So it would just come down to, does he want to stay in Sydney with his young family, or does he want that fourth year for security? If he ends up going to Brisbane, you know, that it's not a bad forward pack to beat behind, really.
No,
you know,
absolutely
starting with
not.
Payne Haas there. Payne Haas is, yeah, he's head and shoulders the best player there at the moment.
He's a machine. And look, yeah, and Matt Lodge, if he can find his form again, like he's nothing to sneeze at either. Like he's a damaging ball runner as well. Like, you know, Payne Haas has just got like a motor on him that it's rare to see in front rows these days. Like it's unbelievable what the amount of work that he pumps through and still being effective, you know, a la Jason Tamalolo, to still be as effective, you know, in the first minute as what he is in the 75th minute.
Yeah. So you, what are you thinking? If you just, I mean, obviously this is all up to guess. Do you think he stays in Sydney and takes 3? Was all the Sharks by the Broncos? I think that's a 2-horse race.
I still think that the staying in Sydney factor is big. Despite the fourth year that the Broncos will offer, because it just depends on like say, I guess. Not so much both teams are in rebuilding mode, but, you know, you're going to have a new coach there at Cronulla. And the other thing will depend on who he wants to partner with in the halves. Yeah, does he see himself partnering himself with Katoni Staggs, who they think is going to be a long term six at the Broncos, or does he if Cronulla comes out and says, hey, we've re-signed Sean Johnson because he's off contract. Matt Moylan looks like he's sort of been again out of flavor, can't stay healthy, has got the biggest thigh slash hamstring guard on his leg known to man at the moment to try and keep everything in. Yeah. If the Sharks come out and say, hey, we've re-signed Sean Johnson, what a dynamic halves pairing that would be.
Oh, and even like, I mean, even, but then they don't have the greatest forward pack. I think it's both ways. I think him and a young Katoni Staggs with that decent forward pack would be great for the Broncos as well. So yeah, I don't know. It's two horse race. I think any which way it'll be interesting. I'm just trying to think who I like which way more. I think I like Sean Johnson more now that you said.
I absolutely like Sean Johnson more.
Because they've still got young.
Staggs is that he's not a proven commodity at the 5-8 position.
No.
Like that's yes, he had a terrific run at the end of last year, four or five or six games or whatever he had. Now I think it might have only been four games that he played at 5-8 last year, but it didn't really project success at the Broncos. Yes, he played well, but the Broncos didn't play well.
Yeah.
So it's whether or not he sees himself, I guess, sort of as a bit of a mentor. To Katoni Staggs to try and help him flourish, or does he go, I want another ring, I want another premiership, so I'll team up with Sean Johnson, a New Zealand international, and let's see what we can produce and see what recruitment that they can do at Cronulla to try and get a little bit better forward pack in front of them and to maybe get a strike weapon, out back. Yeah, Will Kennedy's been playing great, but
it's exactly what I was going to say.
They need to be a little bit more consistent at, a strike center or something along those lines that they can rely on out the back, in the back line.
Well, and also an incoming supposedly brilliant coach in Craig Fitzgibbon as well. So, unproven.
There's a lot
Kevvy
of raps
Walters.
On him in there.
Well, there is. I mean, compared to Kevvy Walters, there's a huge raps in him personally. So,
I think for the last two or three years that he's been chased by a lot of teams.
Club. Every club except for your obvious ones, he's been chased by every club in New South Wales apparently. So,
for him to come out now and finally say yes, I'm ready to take this opportunity. With Cronulla says he's had not so much earned the right, but he's had the right to pick which team he wants to be as his first time team as a first grade coach.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, that'll do it for this week's NRL pod. Don't forget, as always, our socials are Twitter @FinalPlayPod. Which you can obviously give us a like on there, as well as Facebook, Final Play Podcast, which has the link to Spotify and also SoundClouds, which obviously, same as always, you can give us a like on there. And it seems to push it up, but I reckon there's more money involved if it's going to be pushed up. But anyway, that's okay. Also, gimco.com.au is where you'll find this will be the 141st pod. Because I checked yesterday, so that's how many we've smashed through. So, and we'll have an NBA one coming up soon, obviously, because that's getting close to the exciting play-in series.
Very exciting play-in tournament. Give me a break.
Well, I mean, I will say I don't like it either, but if it ends up being the Lakers and the Warriors in a play-in game 7v8, that's going to be very interesting. Because
it's even such a silly way to even do it. Like, it's 7 versus 8. Yep. The winner of that takes the 7th spot. So put a scenario out there. So even if you take last year into consideration, where the Mavericks were like 5 or 6 games better than the 8th spot, how is that fair?
I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I hate it.
And then you could have an injury throughout that game, or, you know, everybody just has a bit of a dumpster fire type game and you lose. And then now you've got to go into this ridiculous playing tournament where 9 and 10 play each other, you know, for the right to play that supposed 8 seed to then try and get into the playoffs. And then when you're an 8 seed and then you've had to play these extra games, and then you go in and then you have to play somebody like the Utah Jazz or the Phoenix Suns who are just going to blow you off the field.
So the Lakers, essentially, if they end up losing against the Warriors, and then they'll play the winner of 9 and 10.
And then they obviously only have to win one because they're the higher seed. The lower seed has to win two games to advance. So it just makes it even more.
Although I will say,
for those lower seeds, they don't deserve the chance. If you're going to be a playoff team, be better. Don't be hot at the end of the season like the Wizards are at the moment.
I thought you were going to say that.
Do you know what I mean? Like you can't.
I agree.
There's no reward for being good at the start of the year and being consistent for the rest of the year.
It's only recency
bias and, they're hot at the end of the year, so they deserve to be in the playoffs. Like, no. It won't
stay around. It's not going to stay around. But I guarantee.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
I guarantee Phoenix don't want to see the Lakers in that 2v7.
They don't want to see the Warriors either.
No. So they were trying to get into it. I mean, we'll talk about NBA later. They were trying to get to that number one, but I don't think anyone would want to see personally the Lakers first up. And then on the other side, I don't think the Bucks would be too happy seeing Miami in the first round. No. So
See, you're getting it wrong there. They won't want to see the Lakers if LeBron is back. They will want to see the Lakers if he's not back because
he'll be back.
Like I said, we've seen the movie Anthony Davis and the Band of Misfits, and that's the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
We've seen that movie before.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, that'll do it this week because you said I do love the Misfits. So my name's Jason. Come on, Laker Misfits. We'll get together. Come on, no. LeBron will be back. This is calculated rest. He'll be back for the playoffs. He ain't silly. He'll be there for the playing game.
I don't know. Like they've just been in crazy free fall at the moment, and I think it's a little bit worrying. This is the longest time that he's sort of spent out of a season in his whole career.
Before that was the Lakers' first year in that contract.
This is now another injury that's had playing with the LA Lakers. So
although the second year he won the title, so I really have to forgive him, obviously. That's right, exactly.
So it's
and he's still
whether it's all part of the plan or not, we'll as they say in the A team, it's I love it when a plan comes together. So. I guess you got to wait and see how the Lakers sort of, if they can get LeBron back and healthy. So I guess I'll be Miles Love It When a Plan Comes Together Plum.
All right. Have a good week, everyone.
Super cool. I can't wait for Magic Round next week. Magic Round.